Decisions are defining. Marion Jones of California began a great career when she chose to join the track team in elementary school. By the age of 12, she was competing internationally. In her 20s, Marion became the first woman to win 5 gold medals for track and field at a single Olympics. Her decision to be dedicated to her sport was defining. But in 2007, the Olympic gold medalist admitted to using performance-enhancing drugs. As investigations continued, it was revealed that Marion had been involved in a check fraud scheme. Marion's reckless decisions in her personal finances and in her sport career led her to spend 6 months in prison as a convicted felon. Decisions are defining. Are your decisions reckless, or are your decisions setting the course for a phenomenal life? In parliamentary procedure, a motion to reconsider allows us to bring back a matter that has already been voted on, even after the final gavel tap. Welcome to Reconsidered, a podcast allowing us time to look back at the experiences, relationships, and skills gained through the FFA in order to make the most of our future. The final tap of the gavel has sounded. Let's explore a motion to reconsider. I'm Adrian, former state FFA officer from Oklahoma, and this is Reconsidered. Of all the decisions we make, the ones that can have the most weight in affecting who we become are our personal decisions. It's hard to learn how to stop being reckless with the little things we do on a day-to-day basis when no one is watching. Our guest is Tobin Redwine. Tobin is a former Texas FFA state president, an instructional assistant professor at Texas A&M, and is an exceptional harmonica player.
I mean, I don't want to brag, dudes, but are you ready?
Tobin also has experience with the ups and downs of the repercussions that come with personal decisions. Go ahead and take a listen. Hey there, Tobin. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, Adrian. Thanks for having me. Thanks for including me in this conversation. I've been looking forward to it.
I'm really excited for us to learn more from you and your experiences, especially when it comes to making great decisions. Go ahead and just start by telling us a little bit about you.
Yeah, thanks. My name's Tobin Redwine. I grew up in a small rural community in the panhandle of Texas called Lazbuddy, Texas. I was very active in FFA and among other activities. And then once I graduated high school, my first year out of high school, I was elected Texas FFA president. So I took the first year off of college and lived in a Ford pickup and traveled around the state talking about agriculture and having the state officer experience. After that, I went to Texas A&M University. Eventually, I earned a bachelor's degree there and then a master's degree at Texas Tech University in agricultural communications. Then I worked for a while in higher education programming and coordination. Now, I went back and earned a PhD, and now I'm an instructional assistant professor at Texas A&M University. Primarily, I teach in agricultural communications and journalism, but I do have an international agricultural development interest in both my teaching and my research. That's the lane that I live in now, but I think the most important part about me and my background is I'm a husband. My wife and I have been married for 10 years, and we have 2 little boys. We have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, so I'm a dad. We're new to being in a rural area again, so my boys are growing up around agriculture one more time, and there's just a lot of fun adventures that go along with that. In addition, I always like to tell people, really, man, I'm just a failed folk singer. Once upon a time, I thought I was going to be a songwriter, and now here I am. I guess I hung around college too long.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. College is a good place to be. It sounds like we have quite a few similar interests in terms of what you've studied throughout your college experience and are continuing to teach, which is definitely exciting. And
yeah, if we get nerding out on some ag communications theory, they'll have to pull us back.
So. Right. And that Texas FFA truck that you referenced, it is famous. Even though I'm from Oklahoma, I think most people around the nation have seen or at least heard of the Texas FFA truck at some point in time.
Oh, man, you totally, I don't know if you did this on purpose, but you totally softballed me into this awesome humble brag. I was the first person to ever drive a branded FFA pickup.
Wow.
Before, in the middle of my year of service, we got the first pickup that had the whole all the way around FFA flag wrap, you know. The first half of the year, we were driving a green Ford Excursion that was not as glamorous.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the NASCAR looking truck. I was the first guy to get to drive one of those. So
that's incredible. That's truly a claim to fame.
It's not on my resume.
Texas
maybe it should
FFA
be.
World.
So not only was I one of the first person to drive that FFA pickup, my team has the unique honor and distinction. We were the first ones to wreck one of those FFA vehicles. We were young and we logged a lot of miles. Thankfully, no one was hurt in the accident. But yeah, one of the guys on our team did wreck the FFA pickup. So we were the first team to have it and almost the last one.
Well,
so I don't know what that says about us.
You know, sometimes things just end up being a little bit more reckless than we intend them to
Indeed, right?
But you've obviously been a state officer and had state officer teammates and have many close friends who are former state and national officers, and you know, now you get to work with college students on a regular basis who are oftentimes making that transition from state and national office. Talk to us about the different categories of mindsets that you see that people have as they exit office.
Absolutely, and let me also share this because it does offer a little bit of insight into my connections to state FFA officership, if that's a phrase that we can use. I'm the youngest of four. My sister is the oldest of my siblings, and then there are two brothers, and then me. My oldest brother, Bryce, was a Texas FFA officer in 1998. My middle brother, Shannon, was a Texas FFA officer in 2001. And then I was a Texas FFA officer in 2003. Mm-hmm. So there have been other sibling sets that we are aware of, but to our knowledge, we're at least in a small group that three of us siblings were all state FFA officers. So we certainly have a big state FFA officer family around
family
us, and we're
affair.
Thankful for all of those connections. And then also, in all of my jobs, I've been associated with higher education related to agricultural education and communication. There's always a large contingent of state FFA and national FFA officers in those groups. So I have been their advisors. I've been their mentors. I'm a current mentor for the Texas FFA officer team. Mm-hmm. I've been around them. I've been teaching them in classrooms. I've been advising them in student organizations, and then eventually recommending them for jobs and serving on committees alongside them. So a lot of experience working with this population of outstanding people and leaders. So I say all that to say, though I am not a psychologist, I'm not a cognitive behaviorist, I do think I have some insight in the types of mindsets that people have as they're making that transition as young adults out of a leadership role into an academic or a workforce role. And what we know about state officers is that it's a massive force in our lives. It's a time commitment. It is a swell to our skills. It's a swell to our self-efficacy. People celebrate state FFA officers. So in your service as a state FFA officer, you have this huge influx of activity and growth and of celebration, of people celebrating and recognizing you. As you transition out of that role into, and I'm using air quotes right now, just another college student, and I don't mean to sound derogatory to college students or to other roles, but as you leave that high focus, high energy leadership role, frequently we find that the mindset our students are in as they make that transition is they're trying to fill this void from this massive several year commitment into what's next. And some people fill that void in healthy ways through things like student government activity or service or community organization or entering the workforce and finding a meaningful job. Unfortunately, many of us, and I'm saying us as a first person pronoun because I think I fell into the second group, is we start to fill that void with some negative habits, maybe even destructive habits, because there are a lot of ways to be the center of attention and a lot of ways to feel involved and celebrated. Mm-hmm. Not all of those are healthy ways. So those mindsets are varied, you know, and I have a lot of responses to this, so let me try to focus them here. Our responses are varied. Our mindsets are varied from overcommitment and oversaturation in activities and organizations to deep and meaningful involvement in a few select activities to trying to find some sense of acceptance and belonging in a lot of areas. And to talk about that third group, that group that I said I think I belong to, let me share a pretty personal story, if it's okay with you guys.
Yeah, of course.
So of all of the state officers that I have known and national officers that I have known, none I've known more closely than my middle brother, Shannon. I was 14 months younger than Shannon, so we grew up almost in the same grade. We look a lot alike. We sounded a lot alike. So, mm-hmm. you know, we were always incredibly close growing up. And on consecutive state FFA officer teams. So many of the decisions that I made because my brother made them. I ran for district and area office because he did. I ran for state office because he did. I went to Texas A&M because he did. And then we found ourselves where we had been, you know, on stage, been on TV, been interviewed, been active, been influential and authoritarian, and then suddenly we were freshman and sophomore at a major university, which was a huge change for us. You know, we went to a school, I graduated with 13 people in my graduating class. There are 60,000 undergraduate students at Texas A&M right now today. So that's a really giant shift. And although the year of service in Texas FFA helped prepare me and equip me in different circumstances, it was still a change. It was still a transition. Mm-hmm. So we started to fill that void of service and attention in some healthy ways. We were very active and involved in student organizations, but, you know, we also felt a little bit of burnout in student organizations. We felt a little bit overcommitted. And at some point, we both of us kind of made this out loud decision. We're tired of being so involved. We just want to go be a, quote, regular college kid. And to us, that meant drinking, that meant going to bars, that meant partying and tailgating and all those other activities. And, you know, and I think we're not the only ones that do that. I think that's an inherent danger, that we can sort of replace this huge, influential good force with a potentially negative force, because there is a lot of attention and there is a lot of acceptance and there is a lot of, you know, celebration in that kind of decision-making process. Mm-hmm. So that's where we found ourselves. He had landed his jobs working at a bar. Even when we weren't working, we were there. And what started as a few drinks now and again eventually turned into some reckless decisions in terms of alcohol abuse for us. Now, eventually, about the time I met my wife was about the time I started to change my priorities a little bit. And so I can't talk about my experiences in understanding decision-making without talking about my wife. When I met her, she wasn't in very many of those circles. She wasn't a heavy partier. She was involved in organizations, but she wasn't in, you know, the super 37,000 organization groups. She had a few select groups that she was involved in. And so she kind of saw these two sides of me, one where I was trying to do every student organization and every activity and also be at every party and be the center of all the tension there. And I don't know that she really agreed with either one of them, but she was kind to me and she cared about me. And at some point, her kindness and her care made me change how I viewed myself. And so because my wife cared about me and it changed how I viewed myself, I didn't seek acceptance and belonging and celebration from any of these other negative decisions. I started to take school a little more seriously. I started to care about myself more. I cut my hair and started to go to class. And eventually, that led me into graduate school and onto some other careers and options. Unfortunately, that's where the trajectory that my brother and I had shared throughout most of our life, it started to differ. My brother was battling a secret battle with depression that not all of us knew about. And looking back on it now, I think depression, in his case, manifests in a time of self-doubt and in a time of disconnection. Mm-hmm. Many times our state officers can find ourselves in that role when you transition out of this huge, focused, central view into a position where there's not an organization of people clapping and chanting your name and run-in songs and autographs and, you know, secret handshakes and gold chains. You can find yourself in a disconnected place and in a place where you're finding self-doubt. In fact, I have heard friends and colleagues talk about how they think they peaked when they were 18 years old as a state mm-hmm. officer. You have a whole lot of life after that, but unfortunately, this is such a huge and important and forceful experience, it can leave us feeling like that. So in that position of disconnect and self-doubt, I think my brother started his battle with depression. And in depression, depression and alcoholism really fed each other. And what turned into drinking a lot turned into full-blown alcoholism. He did fail out of school. It turned into a 10-year battle with alcoholism. Now, there are a lot of ups and downs in this story, Adrian, and I don't want to go into all the details of all of them. So in the spirit of our conversation, I'll tell you that after about 10 years of significant alcohol abuse, my brother was put in a position where he was at a rock bottom. He had been arrested. He had lost a couple of jobs, emotionally, physically, legally, in all senses of the word. He was at a very low point. And that's when he found recovery through a wonderful rehab and recovery community. My brother found sobriety. And that beautiful, brilliant soul that led me into FFA and helped me perfect every speech I ever gave, and taught me how to two-step, and taught me how to charm girls at the dance. That mm-hmm. wonderful, brilliant figure. He was back in my life, and he was in my son's life, and he was a brilliant debater and policy commentator. He's just a brilliant guy, and he was back, and we had him for 19 months of sobriety and of connection. And then after 19 months of sobriety, my brother hit another low time, and he relapsed. And that relapse eventually led him to taking his own life on mm-hmm. January 20th, 2018. So it's been a little over a year since I lost my brother. So that's a long personal story for me to derive that much of who we were, my brother and I, as adults, it really started in that important transformational time when we're mm-hmm. 18 and 19 as a state officer. And some of those habits we developed while we were officers, and some of them we developed in that void of transition. Mm-hmm. But that mindset, I think it goes back to the beginning of this question. We were looking to fill a void of service. Mm-hmm. Initially, my brother and I filled that void with some destructive habits, particularly with trying to be the life of the party. And I don't think we're alone in that. Mm-hmm. And the sad truth is that when combined with increasing mental health issues like depression that my brother was facing, I think that can be a really problematic formula mm-hmm. that others are in as well.
Thank you so much for sharing that story, Tobin. I really appreciate it.
Sure, sure. And for a long time, it was difficult for me to talk about that. And I hesitate to tell the story in a setting like this because I sure don't want anyone to think that I'm telling the story for strange reasons. You know, when I think about telling my brother's story, I think about it because there are a lot of Shannons. There are a lot of Shannon Redwines who have been celebrated and are brilliant and have limitless potential. And they may be secretly battling with some self-doubt and some disconnection. And that mm-hmm. may manifest into depression and anxiety. And the reason that I tell his story now is because I see him so often in officers and in young people and in students that I work with. So it is uncomfortable to talk about, and I'm thanking you for giving me a chance to talk mm-hmm. about it, because there are so many Shannons, and there might be some listening now, and there might be some that might read something about him. And so my point with talking about that is you're valued, and we can fill that disconnect with honest, sincere human connection and purpose. My brother, I think, came close to filling that purpose whenever he found recovery. It's just such a complicated battle to fight, and it takes all of us to do it.
I mean, just as you mentioned, there are lots of factors that went into your brother's situation and even the path that you followed for a little while. What guardrails do you think there are that we should have for our life?
That's a great question. It's an important question for us to think about as a community, as a network. What are guardrails that we can put in place to prevent reckless decisions? I think community is such an important term and an important idea. You know, we view state FFA officers as a community and as a family. And in Texas, there is a past state officer organization. And in recent years, that group has done a great job of finding connection and relevance with each other. In previous years, there wasn't always that connection. And that's not a shot at the organizers of that group. I just think culture is a hard thing that takes some time to build. So one of the guardrails that I think we can lean on is a sense of community. Because, you know, we came out of a team of 10. Nowadays, there are 12 Texas FFA officers, and every state's different, I realize. But no one serves as a state officer alone. It's a team who have a very similar experience and a platform with you. And they're making a very similar transition. Now, at the same time, I recognize when you spend that much time with somebody, there's some conflict. You know, I was really burned out after my year of service. And my first, the gentleman that served as first vice president alongside me, Jared Justice, is one of my closest and most dear friends now. But he and I can both tell you there was a time when if he played one more Honey Brown song in that pickup, I was going to throw that CD out the window, you know. And so when you leave that area, it can be hard to develop that sense of community when sometimes our first reaction is to just jump in to get away from that group and that community and that organization, and let's fill that void with a reckless decision. Mm-hmm. So community, I think, is our first line of defense, but we have to recognize that that's not going to catch everybody. Outside of community, other guardrails that we can instill in our young people as we make a transition out of state officership is that we need to view us as, although they are student leaders, they are empowered adults. And I teach a graduate course at Texas A&M now called Principles of Adult Learning. And we focus a lot on the difference in adult brains and adolescent brains and what that means in terms of learning. Now, that's a whole other discussion. We can get into educational philosophy and how people learn. But I also do see some applications for why people make decisions the way that we do. And that stage between a state officer year of service and a year of integration into academia or workforce comes at a time that our brain is changing so much from viewing ourselves as authority-centered with little experience to self-directed with experiences to frame up our decisions on. So I think if we start to do a shift from viewing ourselves as student leaders to viewing ourselves as an adult cohort, I think that can offer some support and some help. But I think maybe the best guardrail that I can offer, and I saved this for last for a reason, because this is probably the thing that helped me the most as I was making that transition, is we have to help instill in our young people making this transition a sense of selective service. So when I was in my second freshman year at Texas A&M University, I visited with a guy who I love to the moon and back. His name's Dustin Clark. Dustin was a national FFA officer. He was a Texas FFA officer a few years before me, and he was a guy that I really looked to for guidance and mentorship. And we were talking on campus one day, and I told him, you know, Dustin, I grew up in a small town where everybody had to do everything or we didn't have it. I was a three-sport athlete at Lasbody High School. Anybody that sees me knows I'm not an athletic dude, right? So where I grew up, everybody did everything. And I kind of, that transitioned into FFA, where you're always on. We're traveling. We're visiting four or five high schools a day. We're always on. We're active in everything. We're on the committees. We're on the stage. We're competing. So then whenever I got to college, to a university setting, I had that same mindset. And I joined like 7 student organizations, and I was running for offices in all of them, and I was trying to build this huge network while also trying to be the life of the party and do all the things. And at some point, Dustin said, "You are so close to burnout, you don't know it." And I felt internally, I'm not close to burnout, I've been burned out for a long time. So Dustin gave me some great advice, and that's this idea of selective service. He said, identify 3 things. One thing that you can be involved in at a, he called it a local small level. What he meant in my sense was at a department level in my major, at a department level. And then a regional or a college level and then a university or a larger scale level. And so I use two different terminologies there. One if you're in an academic setting and one if you're in a workforce setting. Mm-hmm. But he said identify one thing that's close to you, like in your department or in your local community. One thing that is a little bit more removed from you, like your college or your state or region. And then a thing that's even more removed, like a university-wide organization or a national organization. He said, pick three things and really give a lot to those three things. And so I sat down with him and we talked about some of those things and identified those three things for me. At that point, that's really when I think my mind shift changed from I have to fill this void and be the center of attention and I'm so tired of it and I don't know who I am to really starting to prioritize for the first time, what are my strengths? How can I use them? And that's also when I started to take school more seriously and the trajectory of my decision-making started to change from being reckless to being one that was building and empowering the people around me. And it wasn't until that conversation with Dustin and I met my wife that I really started to have that mindset. So if I can wrap all of this up into a more concise explanation, I think guardrails that we can offer young people who are making that transition out of a state officer year into academic or workforce settings, it's that we really need to lean on our sense of community. And in addition, in that year and beyond that year, we need to help shift the mindset of those young people from being student leaders to being adults who are forming decision patterns that are going to stick with them for a long time. And then lastly, we can help instill a sense of selective service, of purposeful, limited service at deeper levels.
Mm-hmm. I think that those are absolutely like insanely valuable guardrails to keep in mind. And what do you think are some of the attitudes maybe that you've seen in students that help them to keep growing, to not get stuck in that rut of this is the peak of my life?
Good question. So, you know, you hit it, right? We all feel that huge high and we all feel that, man, this is huge. And that can turn into people feeling like it's the peak. I mean, I almost want to take a second just to comment on, like, let's unpack what that experience is like. Mm-hmm. You know, Adrian, you were a state officer. Did you sign any autographs?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Possibly.
I'm certain somebody asked you for your autograph at some point, right? I know I signed an autograph or two. I mean, these are 18 and 19-year-olds, and in some cases 20 or 21, you know, but they're young people who are finding a kind of celebrity. Mm-hmm. And in many instances, it's sudden and it's, I mean, I don't want to make it sound like we're all like child actors or something, but you can almost make a comparison to a sudden burst of celebrity. Now it's through service and it's with honorable intention, but it certainly equates to this level of celebrity. So of course that attention and that celebration is wonderful. And I mm-hmm. do think state officers are a meaningful contribution to shaping our organization. But we do have to recognize that it is such a huge shift to get into that situation where 18-year-olds are taken out of a high school class and put into a setting where they're in front of thousands of people and signing autographs and selling collectibles and being the guest speaker and TV appearances and radio. Of course, that's setting us up for this moment of letdown. I'll also say, personally, I went through that idea really hard of, I mean, I think I've said out loud before, well, I peaked when I was 18. Now I know that wasn't true. I will never devalue my experience as an officer. It totally shaped most of the experiences that I've had since then. But things like becoming a father, things like, you know, this morning a student that I've been working with and mentoring defended her thesis and will graduate with her master's degree. So part of what I think would be helpful to help us avoid that sense that state officer was a high point was the highest point for us is to surround us with those people that have that humility and maturity. And then also through community, let's just point out there's so many more good things to come, you know? Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with that feeling of feeling like you peaked at 18 and trying to figure out where all of the value came from with your state officer experience, how did you wrap all of that up into something that you continue to carry with you even today?
You know, frequently I would think, why was I a good state FFA officer? And for me, a large part of it was because I was a good speaker. And so I thought about, well, why am I a good speaker? I was a good speaker because I told a lot of good stories. I told interesting stories. I told stories that people paid attention to. So in part of my career or part of my experience where I was making some bad decisions and I wasn't finding some traction and some meaning, I would kind of, in lamenting and self-doubting, I would say, all I am is a good story. Now, as a PhD-holding scholar and a researcher and a teacher, you know what my line of inquiry is? It's storytelling, and it's the importance of good stories, and it's the importance of finding compelling messages and how we can use that in communicating science, in empowering people, in connecting with service. So that very thing that I found to be discouraging actually launched the whole rest of my career. The very idea that, oh, I'm just a story and I'm just a jacket and I'm you know, I peaked when I was 18, ironically helped shape all the things I've done since then that I think have so much more impact. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the greatest asset and the greatest strength that we have might be a thing that we hear in that doubt. It's important to think of how we frame our self-doubt and what we're really saying to ourselves. And so I'm recycling this from my counselor. Sometimes when we find ourselves in moments of self-doubt, we need to write down what is that thing that we're doubting and have an honest conversation with ourselves about, is that a projection of a strength that's showing up in a strange way, or is that a perception that I have that doesn't match a reality that others see?
For the state officer that really wants to just unplug for a little while, what are some ways that they can take some healthy time away from being the king or queen of FFA without being perceived as ungrateful for what that FFA experience has given them?
Man, great, because this question really introduces the reality or the perception that there's this dichotomy, right? When you leave, you're either the person who says, I'm done, and you check out, or you're the person that can't let it go, and you're mm-hmm. at every convention, and you're hanging on every word, and they're like, hey, your jacket doesn't fit anymore, right? So we sometimes, and I think that's a negative idea to say that we're one of the other, mm-hmm. even though you and I both know, Adrian, that a lot of people end up in one of those two typifications. So mm-hmm. For the person who finds themselves that you are burned out, and I'm raising my hand high, that was me. I was burned out. I was ready to I still wanted to be the center of attention. I guess I just wanted to be the center of attention and not have to follow rules anymore. So whether that's you or if you're burned out for other reasons, burnout is significant and it's real. In fact, I read an article this morning noting that millennials are more likely to experience burnout earlier in their career than other generations before us. And part of that comes as a product of so much structure, from extracurricular activities being scheduled and mm-hmm. scheduled play dates and scheduled, structured, rigid organizations earlier on than other generations, earlier in our career than other generations, that can lead to some burnout. And I'm not trying to do the old, you know, different generational comparison, walking up the hill both ways kind of conversation. I just thought it was an interesting idea. So we see that manifest certainly with state officers. I'm searching a little bit for a good strategy for us to avoid that burnout. You said an important phrase, Adrian, and that's some healthy time away. Mm-hmm. I think having such a deep connection to an organization, and we all know when you at that level of service to FFA, it's more than just being in a club. I mean, it becomes a culture, right? We repeat phrases like joys and discomforts, and I can joke to somebody about corn gold being my favorite shade of yellow, you know? And
yeah.
And so it really is this lasting and deep connection. And when you have that lasting and deep connection for so long, I don't think it's healthy to just totally go away from it entirely absent for a long period of time. I do think it's likely helpful to change your level of service. When I was extremely burned out from being a state officer, I wasn't so interested anymore in being involved at state and national levels, but at a local level, I still found a lot of value. Healthy separation and healthy space is a good thing. I found that healthy space by changing my level of service.
That's really helpful. We'll go ahead and wrap up with this one last question. What would be your advice that you have for any outgoing state officer?
So frequently I interact with outgoing state FFA officers, And I'm finding out now that I've missed an opportunity to have a unified message to give to each of them. So thanks for putting me in a spot here where I can think through what is that message that I want to give to them. And also thanks for letting me talk through these stories and these complex ideas to help me get at this message, because I think I want to go back to the experience that I had with my brother. Shannon was such a powerful, influential figure. And one of the reasons that I miss him so terribly is because I think about all the good that he did and all the good that he had left to do. State FFA officers who are leaving their year of service, I think, can trick themselves into being in a position of disconnect and of doubt. I want you to view yourselves sort of in the way that I view my brother, as this huge, irreplaceable force for good. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to put unnecessary expectations of greatness or achievement on you. What that means is you need to know you're valued. And you're valued even when you take a blue jacket off. And you're valued even if you don't know what the next step is. You're valued, and through community we can find purpose with each other. I think that's the most important message that I can offer to outgoing state officers, is when it comes to finding the next step and making a decision, let's base it from a place where you know you are a valuable part of my family as a former FFA officer. And even if you don't know what's coming next, know that you're irreplaceable in your role in that family. My last piece of advice is, let me speak directly now to those Shannons. I said there are a lot of Shannons out there. So to those of you who feel like you're in a position of disconnect or self-doubt, let me remind you, you do have value. And there's a lot of resources available to help reinforce that. If you find yourself in that position and in those feelings, know that one of the easiest resources available to you is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. There's 24/7 support. It's a toll-free confidential number. You can reach them at 1-800-273-8255 or at suicidepreventionlifeline.org for a lot of great information on connection. And if you don't want to call them, call a friend. And if you don't want to call a friend, you call me. But talk to somebody and make a connection. Be part of that community. You have value.
Thank you so much, Tobin, for all of your insight and for your time to do this with us. I really appreciate it. In what area of your life do you need to focus more on the decisions you're making? Are you surrounding yourself with friends you want to be like? Are you upholding your personal integrity when no one else is around? Are the decisions that you're making reflecting the person you want to be? Take some time to keep thinking about the way you can answer these questions for yourself. You can also check out more Reconsidered resources online or talk to your state staff for more guidance on using the skills we gained during our state officer experience. Thank you so much for listening in today. We hope to have you back next time as we keep reconsidering what our state officer experience can do for us in the years to come. Let's consider that reconsidered.